Call to order the Planning Commission meeting of January. I have a roll call, please.
Chair Stan Eisner.
Yes.
Vice Chair Matthew Nolan.
Here.
Commissioner Stephen Maloney.
Here.
Commissioner Brian Hyatt.
Here.
Commissioner Daniel Mills.
Here.
Commissioner Jennifer Parker. Commissioner Dennis Teschlag.
You have in your packets the minutes of the February meeting.
November 15th.
Aye.
Opposed? Work session. Work session. It's not a public hearing just yet.
Excuse me.
I jet lag kicking in. Okay. Thank you. We're back to talk about small cell wireless facilities, and most of you are kind of familiar with it. We did give a briefing our last meeting where we got together, and there was a memo in the packet that went to City Council kind of giving some background and addressing options for how to handle it. And there were a couple ways we could have gone. We could have tried to adopt an interim ordinance. But after looking at our code, the conditional use process that we were currently using seemed like we could use that as an interim measure and then just take our time and go through and adopt code amendments just the one time rather than trying to do interim and then coming back and adopting permanent. Oh, first off, I'm going to apologize. The presentation looks a little mishmash because it is. It's partly the attorney's presentation, and I tossed some slides in there, too. So they're going to go back and forth, but it's all one. It just looks mishmash. Okay, I'd like to start out just with a quick little note about the FCC rules, the ones that just went into effect January 14th, so just earlier this week. Basically, the rules limit the city's ability to restrict where the small cell facilities can be located. They limit the city's discretion on aesthetic requirements. We're still allowed to have aesthetic requirements, but they have to be considered reasonable, I guess you'd call it. They limit the fees the city can charge, and they require a quicker turnaround than our current process does. Okay, a quick review of the work program. The first slide here are things that we've already kind of done to get started. We briefed Planning Commission. You guys watched that presentation from Ogden Murphy Wallace, our city attorney's office. We did meet with PUD, and I can't remember if we'd met with them before our meeting. Had we? Yeah. And we did an audit of our existing code. And it did include things like the process and the aesthetic aspects, just to see what we had right now and where we might want to go. And the city attorney's office prepared an interim franchise agreement for us. And what that would do is, this is just if something comes in before we have permanent code amendments adopted, we'd be able to use it. And once we do get our it also has aesthetic standards in it. It has some things in it that aren't addressed by our code. And when we do adopt our code, we'll change the franchise agreement to take those things out because they will then be covered in our code. Okay, the upcoming parts of the work program. We're currently working with the legal counsel to prepare the amendments. Alana Zana, our city attorney that's working with us, she's on track to have some amendments to us to start going through the end of this month. Planning Commission's going to officially get the code amendments at the February 21st meeting. And depending on how things go, we're not sure, you know, we may need more than one work session on it. They are going to be pretty comprehensive, and so not sure exactly how fast we're going to be able to plow through them. If we need more work sessions, though, we'll just schedule them. The quickest we could have a public hearing on it would be March 21st, but we'll take as many meetings as we need to get you guys comfortable with a recommendation for council. And then it will go to council for adoption after you guys have a public hearing. And there's also other steps in there. We have to do a CEPA determination on it. We have to send notice to the Department of Commerce. So we have some other steps to do in there as well. A little bit of background just on small cell themselves. The goal of small cell facilities is to increase the capacity for the 4G network. It's not immediately going to be 5G. What they're doing is they're designing it so that when 5G is available, they'll be able to switch the 5G out where the 4G facilities are. The small cell facilities, they're primarily located in the right-of-way. The antenna is less than 3 cubic feet, and this does include the equipment box and the wiring. And they're a lot shorter. They're typically 25 to 35 feet, and they have to have they have a limited range, 300 to 1,000 feet. So obviously we're going to need a lot more of them. This is a graphic depiction. You can see the macro cell, a lot bigger than the small cell down there at the 30-foot height. In this little graphic depiction, you can see the antenna on top, and that's probably equipment right there. And just some photo examples. The equipment won't be any larger than 3 cubic feet. Here's this picture on the left is antenna. Here's a canister antenna. And then on this light, there's antennas on either side. So those are just some examples of what they could look like. Here's a couple more pictures of what they could look like. This one on the right, well, actually they both are, antenna that are attached to an existing wooden pole. And that's obviously going to have a little bit different look than if it's on a metal pole where the wiring can go inside the pole. You can see the, like on the one here on the right, has the equipment box and the wiring is concealed. And it's painted brown so it matches the pole. So there is some concealment technology that's been used for that. Yes.
Is that one of the antennas that are hanging on a cable?
Yep.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. That it is a possibility. I'm not sure if we can say they can't use them. I think they're less attractive, the ones that are kind of strung on a cable that go between poles. And we haven't actually talked to PUD about this either. I'm not quite sure how it works with their equipment. This is a small cell facility, so you can actually see all the parts of it. Up here on the very top is the antenna, and the fiber, and it's pointing out here in the sky, but I think it's pointing to these brown tubes that are coming down, and they probably have the fiber inside the tubes. That's how they're concealing it. Power conduit, I think that's the silver one, the smaller silver one that goes up the metal. And I'm not sure what this is, to be honest. It says new fiber service. It's not the antenna, so I'm not enough of an expert to tell you what that is. And then the equipment box down here on the bottom and the power shutoff down on the very bottom. And this also does look like it has another fiber service. Maybe that's all connected. The one that's off here, then the box in the middle, and then another matching one over here. Yes. We could. And will. We could, yes. Because it's my understanding that they all have their own, that they're not interchangeable. They don't use each other's. It's, you know, one for each carrier.
Sure. Have we done any mapping to guesstimate if we're 1,000 feet or less apart, what that number could look like, say, 3, 4, 5 carriers?
Maybe way down the road. I think initially not. And the 300 to 1,000 feet, I think that kind of depends on, you know, terrain, what's in between, because, I think they need line of sight. So so it's kind of hard to say. I guess what we want to do is be prepared when they submit something to evaluate it, and it'll be their job to decide what they need and where and how far apart, and then we get to look at it and make it as good as we can for the city.
I don't have the authority to limit any.
Yeah, I don't think we do. Does the FCC limit it?
No, they made it so that it's a fair marketplace. So our job here is to make the, I mean, a few slides down is we're going to pick kind of a poll that hopefully they all can use so you won't go by, oh, there's a Verizon one, oh, there's
yeah.
a T-Mobile. You shouldn't be able to tell the difference when you drive by. And so hopefully we'll pick out poles that are compatible with what we've got, and over time they'll probably switch out.
If that's possible, if there'll be a period of time when you can have poles, like a
street light with an antenna as part of it.
And I imagine it's really expensive. So that would limit somewhat, you know, the applications, I think. Pardon?
What do the applicants believe is the advantage of the system?
Well, what they're doing is they're prepping for the 5G. So the advantage, that's huge, the difference between 4G and 5G. It's like 20 times faster. And so just, you know, in having the faster service for people, but also for the autonomous vehicles in the future, they'll need the 5G to function. So,
as you're driving around with this new system, it needs to be able to think quickly back and forth and react to what's going on, as opposed to having a delay of what our current service levels with 4G. So there's going to be, it has to be much more reactive.
And he, pardon?
I didn't know the lifetime, because that's the current technology. And it seems to me it's such a retro step.
Of
the first of these antennas that went in were requiring that they be hidden in fake trees and in the awnings or in the eaves of buildings so that they didn't become a visual.
Well, we're still going to try and employ some of that concealment technology to make them as unobtrusive as we can. Can't make them invisible, but here's a couple of examples of some wooden poles in Seattle. The one on the left here has a canister antenna on top, and it looks like there's an equipment box just to the left of the banner. And here's another wooden pole that antenna on top, and the tubes that hide the cables coming down have been painted brown. The equipment box is brown. So I think that's actually a pretty good use of the concealment technology. It doesn't really stand out horribly. On this one over here, the box is a different color. I don't think it's just concealed as well. Here's some examples of light poles that have been used. The antenna is way up here by the top light on the picture on the left. And undoubtedly then the cables, it's a metal pole, it's hollow. So the cables go down the middle. There's another power box down here on the bottom. This is I'm not sure if that one's a canister antenna too. Both of these have the antenna on the top. This is a more decorative street light, maybe not too different than what we have in the town center and some of the other areas of the city that we have decorative lights. And I've got some photos of actually the city's lights. And here we go. Here's the Mill Creek photos. And obviously our goal, all the poles aren't going to change out immediately. They might, you know, pick this one, this one, this one. And so it's going to be a mix of new poles and existing poles. So we're going to want something that goes pretty well with the existing pole so it doesn't look too glaring. The pictures on the left here, these are the light poles that we have in the town center. And then the picture on the right over here, this is the North Point neighborhood. It's slightly different, but it is a decorative pole again. And here's a couple of photos from around the MCCA area, around Village Green Drive. These are the concrete aggregate poles. And apparently, according to PUD, they're not going to be able to use these. They aren't structurally sound enough to attach equipment to. So they would definitely have to be replacing them. And one of our goals then would be to pick a standard that they would replace it with. And we do have a lot of different areas in the city that we're going to be dealing with. There's, you know, the MCCA area. There's the specialty areas like the town center in North Point. And then there's other residential areas, some that were annexed, some that have been built more recently. Right here on the left is a relatively new neighborhood at Seattle Ridge. And that is a hollow metal pole. It looks slightly different. This is an old Silvercrest neighborhood pole right here in the middle. And then over on the far right, that's a wooden pole that's also in the Silvercrest neighborhood. It's on 29th. And actually, I did kind of drove around today looking for pictures to take, and I was a little surprised. We have more wooden poles than I thought we did, because I'm kind of used to the main part of Mill Creek where everything was underground. We don't have wooden poles, but down 35th, Seattle Hill Road, Bob Flybert Highway, 9th Avenue, the whole Silvercrest annexation area, we do have a fair bit of the wooden poles. So we're going to want things in the code that address both the wooden poles and the hollow metal poles and the new poles.
And on the hollow metal and the fiberglass poles, did the PUD give you any information about their load carrying capability?
Not specifically on all of them.
I think the wooden poles could be added on to, but all the others is what I'm getting is those are going to be replaced.
Okay, so they can help us go with the standard or, you know,
right,
recommend.
Or require. I think we can require a standard.
I think my vision is that we will pick a standard for various situations that we know about. There might be an exception process if some unusual circumstances, and they'll probably become part of our standard plans on our website. So if they're doing that, and then the franchise agreement that anybody that does anything right away that we'll get with them will require them also to do that. They'll be cross reference, but that way we get the same look everywhere, and hopefully it's compatible, and over time it'll switch over.
Actually, what I have right now are a couple of pole designs that PUD sent to us. And these, like this first one here, it has the bigger base on it, so all the equipment can be enclosed in the base. It has the decorative lamp, and then it has the antenna on top. And some of them actually have quite an extension on top, more so than that one. But I think from the street level, you're not really going to be looking up there. You'll kind of have the visual up to the light. So I think even if it were 10 feet more, it's not going to be that obtrusive. And here's another example. This one has the wider base, but they're also showing an example right down here of a park bench. They're concealing the equipment in that bench, which is a nice idea, and it might be good maybe in some of the commercial areas. I think it might be a little bit overkill to have a bench by every light post around Village Green Drive, but in certain circumstances, it might be nice to be able to conceal the equipment instead of looking at an equipment box on the ground next to the pole.
Let's hang on
for
1 second.
Well, we have to have them be reasonable. We can still have aesthetic standards, but they have to be reasonable. We can't just have, you know, a long list of unreasonable requirements.
We were talking to the city attorney about this. So once we, as the PD sort of says, this pole is acceptable to us, and we think that it may be acceptable to the city as well from aesthetics, we need to bring the carriers in and say, okay, given your equipment, does your equipment, if you go back one slide, does your equipment fit in that box? I mean, is that going to work for you? So it's going to be a partnership, and I think that they're good people. They want to do it. They want to have the least resistance. They want to make their customers happy. We want to make our citizens, you know, the impacts as little as possible. And so it's going to be a bit of a team effort in that, to make sure that we can satisfy everybody.
And we are going to meet with them before your work session. So we'll have, you know, whatever feedback we get from them, we'll be able to bring that to you next month.
And one thing to notice that although the PUD sent us these options, they're doing research along the same time we are. They have not necessarily approved and said that's the poll we want. But we are kind of early in the process, and they, whatever we choose, they're going to have to store, in case somebody hits it with a car and needs to be replaced, there's going to be a yard where these are stored. So they don't want to store, you know, 26 different polls for 26 different jurisdictions. So getting in early on this is probably really good, and hopefully in other cities would then be able to adopt the same thing.
What is the optimum distance between boxes? Not the service radius, I understand that. Between these pieces of equipment?
Well, if it's 300 to 1,000 feet power, then it'd be, so then you'd have to have at least 600 feet apart if it has a range for the overlap. Its own box, and then each. So if you had a 300-foot radius, the smallest one, you'd probably put them at 500 to 600 feet apart, so that the overlap, that there's no gap in between, as far as the signal strength.
Well, now, you're not even getting to my point.
Yeah.
That's true. Each going to have their own pole. Mm-hmm.
No. PUD has told us that they can only have one carrier per pole.
So every pole in town could look like that, and so it could have lots of them.
Over time.
They could match in no time, right?
Pick nice ones.
But yeah, from that standpoint, if we have to do this, would be my input, then how do we get the aesthetic of what we want the city to look like and look at that as an opportunity to get rid of, ideally, wooden poles that don't have wires on them, or, you know, the mix of concrete spun poles, fiberglass, aluminum, to something
right.
that
you want
more.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
So when you get the range of 300,000, is the limiting factor the equipment, or is that also perhaps like the terrain?
I think it's more the terrain. Yeah. It's more terrain would be limiting rather than the equipment. I think they're...
I think it also depends on the carrier. I think that they each have different frequencies slightly, and I think if it's either higher or lower, it might go a little further or something. We're not experts. I think when Alana's here, she would answer some of those questions a little bit
right.
better.
Right, and did I mention she will be at our next meeting?
That is, ask her to set aside the next...
Yeah.
Is anyone ahead of us on this that has gone through the process and started to pick
yes.
polls?
Well, I don't know about picking poles, but I know like Edmonds and Breyer and Linwood already have applications in, and they have installations going in.
I'm not aware.
I'm not sure if they pick poles, though, because what I've seen is attaching to wooden poles.
Mill Creek is kind of unique in that our underground, how extensive our underground network is, so that's a real advantage to us. We have looked at Linwood's and some others, and I think they do it more on a case by case. By case basis, they're probably not as aesthetically astute or as aware as maybe Mill Creek with its history of planned area development, the MCCA, all the covenants, and all the work that's gone into picking out the same pole throughout the whole city. So I think this is sort of unique for PUD and us. I don't know if other cities are as concerned as we are.
Right. Unless the poles look like a beautiful street light.
Well, I think...
Yeah.
But I think realistically only three carriers could roll out a 5G network. I mean, it's...
Right.
T-Mobile, Verizon, and...
AT&T. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, we're going to be down to three carriers, so the thought of five or six, that's just not realistic.
Right. I agree. Okay, just a quick little discussion on what the code is actually going to contain. We're going to go into the process, who's going to be reviewing, what we're charging for it, and then the time frames. That's an important part. The way it's going to work is the small cell permit is sort of like an umbrella permit. At the same time that's being looked at, we also have the same 90-day time frame, if it's new, to approve the right-of-way permit and the building permit. So we have, like, all three permits that have to meet that 90-day timeline.
And the franchise agreement negotiated. And,
yeah, so it's going to be a quick turnaround. And we're going to have those set out in the code. In the code, we are also going to adopt the aesthetic standards that we can. We're going to have application requirements for what they need to submit. And then as far as maintenance, this would be into the future, say when they're upgrading their equipment, how we're going to handle that. And if it's substantially like what was put up there originally, it's probably going to be a pretty minor review and approval. But that's going to be set out in the code as well. So those are the highlights of what we're going to try to hit in the code. No, I think that we're definitely not in the first group that's going. The Edmonds, Linwood, Breyer, what was the other one? Motley Terrace. Those are the ones that are kind of going now, and probably for a couple of reasons, because the Breyer definitely and parts of Edmonds struggle with their service right now. They need it just for probably the 4G service. And
they're closer to Seattle, and they're along the I-5 corridor. So yeah. I think that they're going to strategically where the most people get the advantage. And then as they come in, we're not sure, but it may be like 10 or 15 poles at a time. They may do a quarter of the city at a time as they build it out. And like Sherry mentioned, is it probably be filled with 4G equipment to begin with. It might be redundancy, but they're going to get it all ready. So when the 5G happens and you actually get a phone that would use 5G, because no one has that yet. But as soon as that happens, then they're going to have to swap it ready. They're not going to sell many phones if there's no 5G. So they're just kind of getting the infrastructure in place.
So we're probably second or third tier of cities to get it. So that's also one of the reasons we weren't worried about having permanent code right in place January 14th. So.
But probably within a year or two, we'll probably start.
Yeah.
But they haven't knocked on our door yet. And that's the first thing.
Well, I think that's to our advantage, right? Because then we can wait and see what others have done. Hopefully, like, the pole manufacturers or something come. Or we don't have to wait to, like, we can just start when 5G is ready rather than have to go through it. And then they put in the 4G, and then they come to make their changes when 5G is ready. So
basically, we start when they submit an app, though. So it'll be dependent on the carriers.
Right. Yeah. Oh, right, I understand. Yeah. I'm just saying, maybe if they're not looking at Mill Creek for two more years, that'd be great for us.
Yes, it would.
It would be good because as we go to conferences and hear the horror stories,
right,
even if they haven't submitted yet, we can say, oh, our code could use a little beefing up here, or that didn't work.
Yeah.
And we could even amend it just knowing what's
going happening. First is always the unknown, right? And then you learn the hard way.
Yeah, and that's it for me. I didn't really have anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason we wanted to keep the momentum going and to let you know that we've talked to the PUD, and even though we had talked to them before we met last time, we've had some communications through emails, so they're very interested in this work. We just wanted to bring you up to date because we're going to have something really to chew on at the next meeting.
And plus, some of those pole designs.
Yeah, and keep you moving.
Yeah, and at that time, we will have the attorney here, who's our small cell expert, and we'll have talked to the providers, the AT&T, T-Mobile folks, and we'll have some idea from them, and PUD's going to be at that meeting, right?
I haven't invited them yet, but
will
it's
they?
We will have talked to them, so
yeah.
I'm not sure
so
exactly.
So we'll have more info to bring you, as well as code language.
Yeah, we're hoping,
as well as an extra.
We should have a draft of, I don't know, it might be a little rough, but it should have sort of the main components so we can start going through it. There's a lot of terms in there that staff isn't familiar with and the Planning Commission isn't familiar with, so I think one workshop to get through the whole thing and say it's ready for a public hearing is probably pretty optimistic, maybe a little too optimistic, because I think that when we go to the council and the public calls and asks the questions, we should probably know our code pretty well as far as what all those things are. And so we may have to have pictures of, and descriptions just that we're – so we're familiar with it. This is going pretty fast.
You mentioned you saw more of the wooden poles in the city, and there are those in the older areas and along the main corridors, which I would think would be one of the areas they go. If you can find more, well, I thought it was really, I like the aesthetic you found. If there's more aesthetic devices that are attached onto the wooden poles, either tops or mid or whatever, any research you can do on that between now and next meeting would be hugely appreciated, just because.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful that the carriers will be able to give us some info on the examples of what their equipment looks like, and not to the Planning Commission, but staff will be meeting with them.
Yeah, and so we'll probably have three scenarios. That if it's a wooden pole that doesn't need to be replaced and can be just added onto, this is what it's this, and you have to paint it all brown and do this and that. Or if it's this kind of a pole, then it's. We'll have like a hierarchy or like the scenarios, the typical scenarios of what we want to see there. And so that's what we're going to be proposing.
At some appropriate time, I'd like to have the carriers for the commission.
Well, that may work. I'm not sure. I mean, if they can fit their equipment within the boxes and the light poles that we are prescribing that we want, I don't know if it's any advantage to have them actually there, because once you set the rules, they have to follow them. But I think let's get through the code at the beginning, at the next month, and then go from there and see if there'd be any value to that. There may be. I'm just not sure. I don't want to promise that we'll bring them. I don't even know if they'd come. But let's take the next step, and then let's maybe revisit that. Yeah, we could probably do that.
About trees nearby or surrounding, does that have any impact on the quality of service or anything like, you know, do these things have to be, and hey, you're going to have to now cut a bunch of tree branches or things around there, or does it kind of go through that? I don't know.
I'm not really sure, to be honest, about that. I do know that we talked to Alana about in the town center maybe having them on buildings, and she said that's really doesn't work because they don't have the line of sight. They'd have to have one on each face of the building, and it's just not practical. So I'm going to guess that the poles also need the line of sight, and if you had too much trees in between, that's going to interfere with it, or you know, reduce from your potential 1,000 down to 300. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah. But let's look at those pictures. All seem to be, hey, here's this nice light pole in there, nothing around it, and like that's not too many poles in this town. So,
That's probably a really good reason for the 3 to 1,000 feet. Not only is it the signal type or the terrain of the hills, but it could be just sort of what's in between, because they do need to be. That's why they're so close. Is they need to make sure they have that line. I guess not line of sight exactly, but certainly that does affect. Affects the macro poles a lot, the trees do.
Just a couple of things. I'm curious, we're talking right-of-way, but what if a carrier decided to contact a private landowner and want to erect a pole on a private landowner? And that could be something, a commercial property, MCCA, or a citizen's piece of land. Is it intended that applies to that as well? Because I see the word right away all over this, but I'm just wondering if it's a broader definition. We're just using that right now as a placeholder.
Well, I think most of them, because they're going to put them on streetlights, are generally in the right away. But if they put them somewhere else, they'd still have to follow the rules, but they wouldn't have to get a franchise with the city because it's not.
Okay. Sure.
I think that we, in the code, we should make sure that it does apply, like the macro facilities, the big ones. Mm-hmm. The code's going to include those as well.
Yeah.
And those are all on private property or in easements on private property, like on the big PUD poles.
Sure.
So I think the rules will apply, but whether or not it needs a franchise,
okay,
will be in,
yeah,
if it's in the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I do think though that there is a restriction in a residential zone from having one located on a lot with a residence. It could be on a park in a residential zone, but it couldn't be on a lot with a house. It could be in the right of way.
Okay.
But it,
yeah, I was just curious.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things about this whole small cell is that if they put it in the right of way, we can't say no. Whereas in the private property, they have to pay high leases and things like that, where they're getting it basically for free almost when they stick it in the right of way.
Yeah.
The real push is going to be to shove them in the
So someone asked the question, how many of these could there be in Mill Creek? And the little engineer brain in me said, what if I put a pole up every 500 feet as in a box? So a 500-square-foot box would be 1.5 poles, and the area of Mill Creek is 4.69 square miles. So if you do the math, there's 784 poles.
I like an engineer brain. My brain is not engineer or math.
Could be 700 poles, could be 1,000, but there's a thought process there. It's not 5,000 or whatever. I was curious. It's like,
and there's a lot of wetlands and stuff too.
Yeah,
it may not.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. My guess is 1,500 to 2,000 of these things. But
that meets the earlier definition of peppered, I think.
There you go. Yeah, it's fascinating. That means the install cost on these things is probably only about $20,000 would be my guess max. But anyways.
And the bottom line of this, the reason we're going through this exercise is so that our computers will work faster, or is this the telephone?
It's the need for faster technology in your home, and probably one of the big drivers is the autonomous vehicles. They're required to have the 5G to work properly, so they're looking out, 10, 20 years? They could be driving sooner than that, but
right.
As far as the whole network to work nationwide, like they're talking in decades ahead, just in place. But I think it's just the demand of people to want faster,
right,
and better computer service on their
and
phones.
More people
and
work
reliable.
And need really good service.
And,
is there any work to be done with the county on unincorporated areas that surround us? One of the differentiating things that we find is it's pretty easy to tell when you leave the city limits sometimes, and that's to the detriment, I think, of people driving around. Might be, is there any ability to work with the county on matching styles and types and getting more of a standard look?
We haven't talked to them about this project yet. They are certainly going through the same exercise. I mean, everybody's nationwide is going through that. So that's a good point. We could talk to them. Usually we are concerned that they don't care, and they don't really have the capacity sometimes. I mean, their whole scale is different. They don't have the same attention.
From an aesthetic standpoint, it might be an opportunity to kind of standardize some look, right, and match things up. Because, you know, we used to joke that you knew you're inside the city because the sidewalks curved and they didn't follow a straight line. As soon as you left the city limits, everything was right along the street in a very straight line and not very attractive. And it would be nice if we could maybe approach that opportunity. So.
Now, that maybe an indirect, that's a great point, but I think indirectly if we work with the PD to pick out the poles, because the PD, it's really nice that we only have a few light poles that the city owns, and those are the ones that are the fancy ones. Most of them are owned by the PD, so they have to meet the PD's standards as far as what the permit looks like, what the drawings look like, and get approval by the PD before it comes to us. So if they standardized the poles and we were all in agreement on what kind of pole they're going to use, it would make sense for their yard and storing all these things for when they get knocked over and stuff. Hopefully the county getting in front of this is really good, because the PD has a real interest in not carrying 10 different kinds of poles.
Absolutely. I thought maybe we could get ahead of it and ask the question.
Yeah, that would be great.
That
I think that's a great point. I hadn't thought of that.
I'd throw out another point about bringing the MCCA in on this maybe, especially with the replacement of the poles along Village Green Drive. There might be some people that aesthetically, all right, this is the chance to get rid of those poles. Or there might be people, wow, I love those poles. I don't want them to change.
Well, you know, that's a good point.
so I want the same style of pole, you know.
Well, that's a good point. I think that I think it's going to be an important issue for the community.
Sure.
And so I think before the public hearing, we may want to have a workshop to where we just sort of introduce it to people that care and invite the MCCA as well as other associations, and I'll put some information out in the city newsletter with sort of the drawings that are being considered, and get some input before we have them. I mean, that would push back the process a little bit, but I think it's important to do it right.
What will become of, so once we're, you know, kind of fully installed, you know, a few years down the road, what becomes of the old macro facilities? Oh, they will?
No, yeah, they'll still be there, and our new code will still address those type of facilities, and they'll probably still carry the 4G, and over time, they may go away. I mean, I'm not sure, but if they replace all the 4G stuff with 5G at some point, then you're still going to need the overall coverage that we have today. For those that don't upgrade until they make you buy it like an HDTV, maybe they make you all buy a 5G phone. I don't know. That explains.
You can be recused from this entire process, Stan.
That's
hilarious. I mean,
rotary.
Stan's gonna be the first 5G among us.
Stan's going home to listen to his gramophone and his rabbit ears.
Black and white television with
yeah, exactly.
Now you sound like my kid. Okay, do we have anything for the good of the order?
I've got several things.
Oh.
Several announcements. Last council meeting, the city council appointed city staff and council assignments to different committees, and they've decided for the first time to appoint a city council liaison to the Planning Commission, and the person selected is Mayor Pro Tem Brian Holtzclaw. He couldn't make it tonight. I talked to Brian today, and what the intent is not that he would participate in the meeting of the Planning Commission, like, you know, like as part of the deliberations. He'd be someone that would be sitting in the audience, and then he could report back to the council firsthand if he wants to give them as part of his reports during the council meeting, or direct their attention to what's in the minutes. And if the council has input or has suggestions, then they could talk to him. And as a group of the council, if he could come down, he might have an opportunity at the beginning of the meeting to say if the council had asked him to provide any communication to the Planning Commission. So I'd expect starting next month, he will probably be here. We're going to provide him with a packet just at the same time you get a packet. I don't know exactly how that's going to go, but I think that's kind of exciting to have better communication with the city council, and you're going to be doing a lot of really important work coming up, which I'll talk about here. So I think that's good news. Another thing that we talked about, while that's good, I think there's still a real need for the Planning Commission City Council to get together on like an annual or every 2 year kind of a basis. City staff is putting together our work program. There's new budget that just came out. We have projects assigned for 2 different years. We're going to be programming it out by quarter. And once that happens, we would like to probably schedule a Planning Commission. You would come join the City Council at one of their meetings. We'd do a special notice for, since you'll be a quorum, to be at that meeting with them and discuss the work program that has been put together for the Planning Commission. And then have dialogue, sort of what their expectations are. You could talk about what your visions are, and kind of get just some communication, and then maybe tie in with that on an annual basis or whatever you think it's best. But we used to do that in the past. We didn't meet a lot for the last few years, so we haven't done that. But for those of you that are new, you probably haven't had that experience. Those who've been here a while, we've done those. I think it's been very helpful, and you kind of, it's good to know who they are, and good for them to know who you are. And it's usually a good meeting. I think there are some cities that have very hostile relations between the Planning Commission and the City Council. We don't have that, so it's not like you guys need to be brought into line or to shake your cage or anything like that. But anyway, I think it'd be a good idea. So that would probably happen sometime in March. We're having our staff retreat in February. So we're going to put a work program together, and once that's done, I would expect that you'll probably get an invitation to run the city council. We can talk about the February meeting. We probably have a date sort of figured out when that might be. We are working on a RFQ for request for qualifications to hire a consultant to work with us on the Mill Creek Boulevard corridor study, sub-area plan, transportation plan. And so that's pretty exciting. And so I would expect that we could have our kickoff meeting probably in April. It's going to take time to get the qualifications, pick the firm, negotiate the contract. But as soon as that happens, you will be the body that this consultant works with. There will also be a shareholder group that will be the property owners and probably some at-large members as well, but the people that own property within the corridor. And then in past processes, we've had a couple planning commissioners be a part of that shareholders group, and maybe council member as well. But basically, they could meet like more often, and then we'd bring whatever the product is to the planning commission as a whole, probably once a month. We may also ask for you to meet more often than once a month through this process. We want to have a real aggressive, make sure that we don't waste a lot of time on this. We want to do a really thorough, really good plan that's feasible, but we don't want it to drag out over a year or two. We'd like to sort of, and it'll probably be phased, because we talked about just doing the planning and then just doing the infrastructure kind of stuff, and we had a meeting today. We're probably going to try to get a firm that can sort of do it all, the first phase for the planning and the other one to do some of the design work for the infrastructure. And so we'd like to have the first phase done before the end of the year, maybe by November. So that's pretty straightforward, and there'll be some overlaps seeing how it's going, then they can start doing the design work. And part of the impetus is that we've got some failures for some stormwater improvements in the roadway and some overlay that needs to be done, and we don't want to spend a lot of money repairing all the infrastructure if the plan means we're going to make the road narrower and move the storm grates in next to these new curbs and have to tear it all up and redo it again. So we're trying to, you know, we may not do these improvements in the next 1 year or 2 years, but we want to make sure that everything we do is consistent with and promotes the vision that we create. This will also probably lead to some part of the, also the second phase would be the initial plan will be done. Some of that stuff will be required to be put into the comp plan, more than likely, and there's an annual process for that. So that phase, before it actually ends up in the comp plan, might take a little bit longer. But we want to have the glossy plan, sort of our vision, done in that first 6 to 9 months. And just another update, on February 12th, the City Council will be considering the code amendments that you had your public hearing and your recommendation in November. We, because of the budget process, it wasn't taken to the council, and so it's going to be at the City Council finally on the 12th of February. So that's a lot of for the good of the order, and that's all I had planned to talk about.
Good.
I got some recipes.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioners?
I'm good.
Motion to adjourn?
I would make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great.
Home Bill Creek Belong. Yes.
We didn't hear from Jennifer?
Well, you had to visit.
Yeah, my
birthday. Can you imagine if.
Yeah.
I mean, so much potential along. I think for the property owners, for us as a city.
Did it bounce back, Nathan?
Maybe. She sent me an email about a week after the planning commission meeting.
RV pond over there.
I had plans that night.
A lot of value to the Albertson parking lot.
You're here tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Remind me, we should probably send an email.
Well, it's open.
Is it open?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, and if she's not going to be there, she needs less known in advance. Because it has to be, it's not an excuse. So she has two an excuse. One, isn't it one more that she's going to be kicked off?
Yeah.
So we should look what the rules are, let her know. And maybe she doesn't have the time to do it. And if so, we should get somebody that does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is not just like, oh, here's a little bedroom and a bathroom. I've been up there for the building for all those years. It's like a three-bedroom house up there.
Wow.
One floor. It's really weird. But one of the plans I have is that it could be a spot where, like, a touring band can come in, play and stay and move on.
Another reason Mill Creek could be a little, you know, small venue.
Yeah, that makes me a nice small hotel somewhere.
They need to play a little bit of this crowd. We'll get
it. Yeah,
that's a piece of
nightmare. Oh, yeah. That's